now. Stop. And it just gonna hit and yeah, okay. I don't know how to.
Wait, I think I can do it. Let me see.
I know, I got it.
Suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms will ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, "Please adore me." And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on
KBOO
Portland. Listen,
laugh,
learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
Thank you for tuning in to Let's Talk, Portland Community College's broadcast about disability awareness. Let's Talk is a space for students from Portland Community College experiencing disabilities to discuss perspectives, ideas, and worldviews in an inclusive and accessible environment. We broadcast bi-weekly on our home website, pcc.edu/DCA, and bi-monthly right here on KBOO 90.7 FM. Today's the first Friday of the month, so we're coming to you live from KBOO studio. As a reminder, the views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions or positions of Portland Community College, PCC Foundation, or KBOO FM. My name is Asher, and with me today is Miri Miguel, along with our special guest, Patricia Kelper, accessibility analyst at the Portland Police Bureau and former accessibility specialist here at PCC. Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Asher. How's it going?
Going good. Hi, everyone. And Happy New Year as well.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Do you guys do anything fun for New Year?
I was at home pretty much. Yeah. Nothing much really happened other than the fireworks. It was very, very loud fireworks this year, especially in my very quiet neighborhood of North Portland.
Yes. Yeah, my cat was not especially happy with the fireworks this year.
You do anything, Miguel and Patricia?
We have a family Monopoly tournament every New Year's Eve.
Ooh.
We have a little trophy and everything. So my son won this year.
Awesome.
I just stayed at home. I didn't really have any New Year plans. It's cool.
Yeah, but I might steal that Monopoly tournament idea and just force everyone I know to play with me.
I would take you up for it, but Monopoly is a very, very long game.
Yeah. Oh. Well, that's what makes it fun, right?
Yeah. Because
you start, you know, around 7, 8 o'clock, and at midnight, you're done.
Well, we are here to interview you, Patricia. So first of all, just introduce yourself and tell us a bit about who you are and your background.
Sure. My name is Patricia Kepler. I am, first of all, I am totally blind. I travel with the support of my seeing eye dog, which I have a new one. I almost gave the wrong name. Mm-hmm. Her name is Rhea. We've actually only been home from training for almost 2 weeks. I met her on December 3rd, so we haven't even known each other a full month yet.
But that's
she's a great dog.
It's a quick turnaround, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's been an amazing month. But anyway, I am a disability advocate. My whole career has been working on advocacy, disability, social justice.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's super cool. So you work with the Portland Police Bureau, and what does an accessibility analyst do for the Portland Police Bureau?
Oh, that's a good question. This is a new position. I'm the first person to hold this position with Portland. And in fact, I've done some research across the country hoping that I could do some networking. Apparently, I'm the only one of its kind in the world. I have not found another police bureau that has been proactive enough to create an accessibility analyst position. So I work in the chief's office. I report with the equity team directly to Police Chief Day. And so if a citizen has an accommodation request, maybe they need help getting police records or, you know, something that has to do with the police, they can go through me, and maybe they're having a problem filing a police report. As well, if they've had an experience with the police that they feel that they were not treated appropriately due to their disability or not provided an accommodation, they go through me for that. But as well, I also train the police. I've been creating a series of disability-focused trainings to educate the police bureau and staff, professional staff, mm-hmm. about the history of people with disabilities in Portland. Some of the, you know, some of the more unpleasant things like the ugly laws, and just the connections and why it's important to connect with people with disabilities and the most appropriate ways to do so.
Mm-hmm. What are the ugly laws you mentioned?
Yeah.
If you don't mind my asking.
Yeah. The ugly laws. So I'm trying to remember what year they established now. I don't have those notes in front of me. But so around, I think it was around 1920 or so, mm-hmm. There was this movement to get people who were unpleasant to look at out of sight. Mm-hmm. And Oregon, I believe, was the second state to adopt ugly laws. And Oregon's law made it illegal to be unsightly in public. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, only one person was actually arrested for violating the ugly laws, and that was in the 1970s. Art Honeyman went out to breakfast. I don't know if any of you have seen the movie. Music Within, it actually talks about it. Mm-hmm. He went out to breakfast with his friend for his birthday, mm-hmm. and the waitress refused to serve him and called the police, and he was arrested for being ugly in public.
How could they have argued the constitutionality of that?
Well,
I mean, that seems like the most fundamental violation of human
rights. Violation
of
human rights, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely right. Well, that's why it's no longer a law.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, so.
And other things like, you know, Oregon's unpleasant history with forced sterilization of people with disabilities,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, our eugenics board, was active until the mid-1980s.
Oof. So, wow.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. So making people aware of those things, that there are people out there on the street, alive and breathing, that were victims of those laws and are still feeling the pain.
Mm.
And you're there to make sure that that kind of thing doesn't happen.
Exactly. Oh, but to also be aware that they might not trust you because, you know, this has already happened to them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, if someone was around for that, or if their relative was sterilized or something like that, then that would definitely be a great way to very quickly lose trust in the system.
Mm. Absolutely.
And I feel like a lot of people know about Portland's history of racial redlining, but I haven't heard of any of these disability related laws until right now, and I do this for my job, so they are not often spoken about, I think.
No, they aren't. Before I left my job at PCC, our department actually created a disability history training for staff and faculty there. And yeah, it was a very similar response. People were like, why isn't this stuff being taught? Why are we, you know, we didn't know about these things. And it's frustrating because it is something that's been swept under the rug and not enough people are talking about it.
Certainly.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So did the police bureau create this position because of you, or did they find you after they created the position?
No. So like many police bureaus, they've had some problems over the past. There is a DOJ settlement due to some abuses of people with disabilities in the past. Mm-hmm. So this was partly that to make sure that they could get to the other side of that settlement and fix the problems that they had that led to things like, I think it was 2012, James Chassie was a person with mental health issues who died during an interaction with a police officer that didn't go well. So there were some things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That very sadly happened. And as I said, Police Chief Day has been very proactive. He's very hands-on with me as far as, you know, we communicate quite a bit about barriers and issues, and we've had some great conversations, and he's very encouraging about my work.
Yeah.
How'd they find you specifically?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I mean,
I've looked at all the
background of all the stuff
I had friends that worked for other bureaus in the city, and they sent me the job posting.
Huh.
And so I went ahead, and I have to say, at the time, I was very nervous. I went ahead and filled out the forms and had an interview, and when they offered me the position, I was a little reluctant. I was very happy with my position at PCC. Like I said, we'd just done that big project with disability history there. I actually, you know, I absolutely loved our supervisor. Kayla is extremely proactive and gets it. Yeah. So I,
Kayla.
Yeah, you know, I mean, from day one at PCC, I never had an accommodation need. And I think that was probably the hardest part about switching back to the real world, I guess. It's like all of a sudden I'm having to fight for accommodations again. And those got resolved. But that was probably the hardest transition, is to not have somebody just automatically get it, that, you know, you need these things and that's how you do your job. But overall, like I said, the sworn staff, we've done some great things this past year. We gave some grade school kids, disabled grade school kids, a tour of the Justice Center downtown. And I had such a fun time working with the officers. They looked at the history museum. These kids got to climb all over a police car.
Aww.
And then we went into the chief's office, and they were able to ask whatever questions they wanted. So that was really fun. And, you know, we did an ADA event in July at Portland's Infinite Living Resources. And, we've just been getting out there with the community and connecting the police with people with disabilities to try and reduce some of the fear that's out there.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
That's very fantastic.
And you are currently listening to Let's Talk, Portland Community College's radio broadcast about disability on KBOO Portland.
Nice. Yeah. So, Patricia, you worked at PCC initially, and now you're working with the police bureau. Can you tell us what would you say the difference is with accommodations between the two organizations? And
Well, like I said, when I went, well, okay, first of all, my job before PCC was Independent Living Resources, which is a nonprofit here in Portland that works with people with disabilities. And there were often times, even though that was an organization focused on disability, where I didn't get the accommodations I needed because, you know, it was a small nonprofit. They're expensive. Yeah. Going into academia, where they're already meeting the needs for the students due to federal laws and things like that, and having, like I said, Kayla as a supervisor, I mean, the very first day I had a laptop with my screen reader. They asked me what I needed, and they made sure I had everything I needed to be successful at my job. And that was totally amazing. And I got really comfortable with that. You know, I worked for PCC for 8 years, and it was kind of a little bit of culture shock to leave that and go back into the real world. And like, oh, wait, the rest of the world doesn't quite get it. And having to make an argument for why I would want a program such as Kurzweil, which is an optical character recognition program to convert inaccessible documents into a format I can read.
Mm. Have things improved since then, at least for you working with the police bureau?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got the tools I need now. And I've been working with different departments and actually crossover into public safety, 911, teaming up with them to work on some projects together, as well as a general ADA steering committee citywide.
Mm, wow. Very impressive. That's cool. Yeah. Also, tell us about the Oregon Commission for the Blind and the work that you did with them. Okay. You talked about it a little bit initially.
Right. So I was a commissioner. So under the state boards and commissions under the governor, they appoint people to be commissioners to the Commission for the Blind. So I did 2 terms. As a commissioner for the Oregon Commission for the Blind. And basically, there's a group of us, there's a business professional, a couple of people who are blind, I'm trying to remember a medical professional, I believe, as well, that oversee it. During my tenure there, we actually were part of the team that hired the current director. That was that transition. We did, you know, review documents, things like that. It was a really interesting position. I've served on 3 commissions under the governor, the Oregon Disabilities Commission as well for a short time, and I'm currently serving on the State Independent Living Council.
Interesting.
What is the function of that council?
Well, so the State Independent Living Council kind of oversees, so there are 7 independent living centers in the state of Oregon.
Oh, wow.
And that's, again, another important part of disability history. Very quickly. This amazing guy named Ed Roberts, who had polio, went to college in Berkeley. And at first he was denied access because he couldn't access the dorm rooms because of his wheelchair. And they ended up putting him in the college hospital because that was the only place they could house him. And he organized with other disabled students and really fought to change things at Cal State Berkeley and created the very first independent living center. He went on to go to the Department of Rehabilitation, which is a state agency, for funding and support, and was declared unemployable. But yeah, right? Denied service, unemployable due to being polio. Well, the amazing story of Ed Roberts is not only did he create the independent living centers that are now a national organization, but he was eventually appointed by the governor to be the head of the Department of Rehabilitation in the state of California, and was essentially the boss of the guy who told him he would never get a job.
Wow.
So Ed Roberts was an amazing leader.
What goes around comes around, as they say.
And honestly, learning his history and seeing how changes in for people with disabilities started with college students was really one of the motivators to get me to leave ILR and go to PCC, because I really wanted to make sure today's college kids still knew about it and that they didn't, because the ADA is a thing, and things are certainly a lot easier for students in K-12 than they were when I was in K-12, although I did not have my disability then, but I did know some students.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get comfortable, like I did, right, at PCC. Accommodations were a thing. You just had it. And then you leave the comfort of that secure environment into the real world, and it's not really there. So wanting to keep that information alive with students, helping them keep the fight going and keep thinking, not allowing things to go stagnant, was very important to me.
So what is an independent living center? Yeah.
So they provide four primary services. They provide peer counseling. 51% of the staff has to be a person with a disability. That's one of the rules. So there's peer counseling to help, you know, maybe you're newly blind or newly disabled. It's cross disability. So you can get some support. They do skills training. I often partnered with the Oregon Food Bank to do cooking classes, adaptive cooking classes, and things like that for our consumers when I worked there. They also do advocacy. So if you're having issues with some support or, you know, with a program or services, they can step in and help, you know, help with that. And information referral. A lot of people who are newly disabled have no idea where to even start to get help. So they can call them and get some information about where to get started, depending on what their disability is. So that's, yeah, that's what they do.
Fantastic.
Very fantastic. You've also worked with TriMet as part of their committee on accessible transit. What's that like, and what are the largest barriers for disabled people trying to access transit? And Miguel, you can also pipe in because you're also one of our...
People accessing transit.
Yes, people accessing transit, and you're also low vision and a blind user. So that's
So I am on TriMet's Committee for Accessible Transportation. It's a standing committee. And actually, they're, I think, in their website, trimet.org/CAT, I do believe they're actually taking applications for anybody who wants to join the CAT right now. And again, so yeah, we've worked on different barriers and give recommendations to TriMet as to, you know, things that are needed. One of the big issues for people who are blind, and Miguel, you can chime in on that with me as well, access at the transit center. See, other cities, when you get to their, whatever, their light rail, whatever, you have a, you know, a turnstile or something you go through. There, it's actually organized. We have no set location to where you're going to find that little activator box to activate your hop card before you get on the mat.
It needs a little tune to people.
I haven't even considered that. That's
like
a good point.
Tactile markers or something. Some of them are in the middle of the streets, and you're like, I don't feel safe when in the middle of the street.
There's no consistency. So been a big thing that we've been working on, is try to resolve that.
What are some of the ways?
More braille signage. I'm sorry. Yeah.
What are some of the ways that you have brainstormed to solve that problem?
Locator beacons are, you know, you can hear the tone, but there's so there's so much noise, especially downtown. So that is somewhat problematic. Personally, I would like to see them move the activator box onto the MAX, so that as you're boarding the MAX, just like on a bus, a fixed rate bus, you just swipe your card and you're on. And I do not understand the reason why they won't do that, but that's what I've been advocating for probably 6 years now.
Yeah, me neither. But that is because, you know, buses universally, you walk on, you pop your little card against the reader, and you're on good. Board, but
absolutely.
Yeah, I don't see why they don't do that on the MAX.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess maybe I could have some theories, but
I don't understand.
Less informed than yours.
Yes. No. Exactly.
Like, especially, you know, I mean, there's always this concern of vandalism, right? Yes. So I think it's less likely to be vandalized on the train than it is on a pole in the middle of a sidewalk in the middle of downtown Portland.
Probably.
Actually, I think I've seen those like tap boxes on the trains at like the PSU lines, basically, like the trams that go through PSU.
Are they not? Like the streetcar?
I think so. I can't tell the difference.
The streetcar is not TriMet, that's city.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I could never tell the difference. I'm sorry. I'm like, trains, trams, question mark?
The difference is the max takes you place you might want to go, and the streetcar just takes you in a little circle.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, it still takes you, I guess, to places.
Yeah, in a little circle.
In a little circle.
Like, oh, do I want to go kind of near Powell's or kind of near OMSI? One of those, I guess.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, no, I never thought of it that way. But yeah. That's a great idea, though, to add a little tune, because I just got back from Hong Kong myself, mm-hmm. and I also did a little piece on accessibility in Hong Kong, too. And how they do it in Hong Kong is that they have a little song playing in the train station like a little stand for people with low vision and who are blind to get over to that stand, and then they have like a tactile map of the station and where to find like a concierge or where to find exits, and then there's like Braille display on there, too.
So, and they have those tactile markers
on the sidewalks
that are different depending on where you need to go.
Yeah,
so cool.
I mean, I need to share that podcast with you, Miguel. I don't think I shared it with you yet.
It's an excellent podcast that you can find on our website, pcc.edu/DCA.
Plug!
I mean, yeah, here at stations, all we have are like teenagers yelling at each other, I think.
That's okay.
Oh,
shoot.
Much less helpful then. Much less helpful than an actual tactile map.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So what other kinds of things are you working on in that council for TriMet?
Right now, well, so it's like some of us are working on, there's a committee for the 82nd revitalization project. I'm not exactly sure what it's called, but they're redoing things on 82nd. And so there's a member of CAT that's serving on that. And like the FX bus line there on Division, they're putting one in Washington County along TV Highway. So we just had somebody join that committee to make sure that it doesn't have some of the initial access barriers that the FX did on the east side. Mm. So, you know, we're doing things like that. I actually co-chair the Wayfinding Committee, which meets the I'm trying to remember, the last Tuesday of every month. Sorry. December was a bit wild for me. Last Tuesday of every month at 9:30 in the morning, we have a wayfinding committee where we invite the public to attend. And like I said, all the Zoom meetings are posted on that website at trimet.org/cat. Mm. We love to have people join us. And if they are experiencing an access barrier, to share it with us, because I know what I experience, and I know what, you know, people I know will often share what they're experiencing, but there's a lot of people out there on the TriMet system, and if we don't know about it, we can't fix it. So we really encourage people to speak up and come to those meetings.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. You are listening to Let's Talk on KBOO Portland. I want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform, and that means we are funded by you, the listeners. If you are enjoying the program today, please show your support by making a contribution today, or better yet, become a monthly sustaining member. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. That's KBOO to the number 44321.
Thanks, Mary. So, Patricia, you've done a tremendous amount of work for and around the community. What keeps you going in the face of all hardships, resistance, and all the red tape?
Keeping focused on the little victories, because you're right. I mean, there's a lot of daily struggle as a person with a disability. You're going to come across things that hit you hard on a single day and make you just want to go back inside and lock the door and not come back out. Mm. I have a very supportive family and friends, and so when I've had those moments and I just want to, you know, go to bed and cry, they've been there to support me and listen to me and just help me get back out there and try it again. And I try to keep a good, somewhat wicked sense of humor.
That definitely helps.
Yes.
I think that's true with everyone who's working in this industry.
I often say, you know, today's frustration is tomorrow's anecdote. And find a way to laugh about it. Like, you know, make it more about the absurdity of what you experienced rather than the frustration of it. It's like, could you imagine anybody having to suffer, you know? Like, for example, like I said, I have a brand new dog, and I was trying to introduce her to a street crossing, and this very, very helpful person, ran up ahead of me as I was trying to direct my dog to find the pole, and pushed the button and then started yelling, "It's green, you can cross, you can cross." And I like, "Thank you, but I'm trying to show her the pole." And the person grabbed me and tried to drag me across the street. And I'm like, no, I'm going to show my dog this pole. And so then she grabs me again and puts my hand on the pole. I'm like, okay, fine, thanks.
Listeners, don't ever do that to someone who is colorblind.
Please don't do that. And when you think about it, if any of you, you know, you're like crossing the street and anybody is going to do it's just absolutely bizarre that someone would think. And yet, I know they were in a good place. I know she totally meant well, but it wasn't what I needed.
Definitely not.
No. Yeah, it's hard to know what is the right way to interact with disability because most people... It is shied away from.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I mean, absolutely. In fact, I have the funniest story. See, I totally have frustration.
Right? Yeah, but, no.
Sometimes I do presentations at schools, and there was one day I just talked to a grade school, and it was a little, I don't know, probably 8-year-old kid, and I was in the grocery store, and I was on an aisle, and I hear this little kid say, Dad, that's the lady that was at my school today. She's blind. That's her dog. And he was telling her, and the dad looked at me and said, "She's not blind. Blind people wear sunglasses."
No.
This poor kid, right? No. He's like, "No, Dad." And I just started laughing, right? And my husband was on another aisle. He was like, "What's so funny?" I was like, "Apparently I'm not adhering to the dress code."
No. Apparently I'm not either. So, you know,
the stereotypes are terrible.
They're so bad. Like, they're movie so stereotypes. Bad. I'm like, no. Yeah. Not all of us wear sunglasses. I mean, even though I do have the new Meta Ray-Bans, which are super cool.
Yeah.
I do have my smart glasses.
Those are so those cool, aren't they?
So do those? And they are tinted. So yeah. Sometimes you will see me in sunglasses now.
So do those, like, work?
Yeah.
They're not, like, super buggy or anything? I mean, I only remember when these came out, like, 15 years ago initially. Like, the first
Did
round
they
where they just
15?
Didn't do...
No, the Ray-Ban glasses are only a couple years old.
Yeah, those ones are new.
I was
going like,
to say.
The Google Smart Glass that was from, like, 2012
smart
or whatever.
Yeah, the smart glasses were very buggy. So that's the thing about these, right? I mean, they were not produced for people who are blind. However, they're very useful. I mean, you know, I can ask them, "What am I looking at?" And it'll, you know, tell me what it sees. Sometimes it invents things that aren't there, which is kind of
character. I've heard about that.
Yeah, there was a time it told me there was someone laying on my couch, and I'm like, "No, there's not."
I would be terrified if that happened to me.
I asked it if it saw ghosts.
And what was the response?
At first
curious.
It said no, and then it said, "No, I was wrong. There's nobody on the couch." But, I mean, it'll read the menu to me in a restaurant. I can have it read the menu, so that's awesome. Wow. I can send text messages, make phone calls without having to pull my phone out. So that's all hands-free and awesome. I can take videos. In fact, one of the things I've used it a lot for is when I order an Uber, because, you know, we have this history of Uber drivers saying, "We don't want your dog in our car."
Mm.
So I will start recording when the Uber car driver pulls up. And if they tell me I can't get in their car because of my dog and drive off, I send that video along with my complaint Uber.
No, yeah.
So that's a game changer because before it was just our word against them. Yeah. But now I have actual evidence. Like, this really happened. Yeah. So
I'm curious, what's the the rules for allowing a guide dog into a Uber or a Lyft or one of those
It's against the law to deny me access from a service dog.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's similar to allowing service animals into a grocery store or a restaurant kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. Something new every day.
One of the very powerful things that the ADA did to, you know, make sure that would happen and people wouldn't just, you know, kick you out of their car or their taxi and drive away. You know.
Exactly. Yeah, no. I had one driver lecture me and tell me that he shouldn't have to take a service dog in his car. And I said, "Well, maybe you should stick to delivering food rather than people."
Sir, I don't think you realize that you are currently operating a business. There are laws that you must follow. Yeah. What do you use yours for, Miguel?
Yeah.
Your glasses?
A lot of the same things. Sending text messages, calls. asking, hey, Meta, what is this? And then, you know, getting a bizarre answer from, like... I've done, like, little video snippets. That's pretty fun, too. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see what else we'll do in the future. I think that would be super neat.
Are they bulky, or are they just, like, glasses-sized?
They're just sunglasses. Oh. The new... I have, like, the brand new ones that just came out, like, November. And yeah, they're,
the
like...
The Ray-Ban or the other brand?
The Ray-Ban. The brand new one, second generation.
Oh, wow. Those are fancier.
Yeah. They're, like, much lighter and thinner. And I've actually had to use those at work, so it's been...
How much do they cost?
Like $400.
Yeah.
Oh, that's actually really cheap.
They're not that bad.
You can still get Gen 1, and they're $300. Okay. So they can range from, if you want to get the fancier features as far as, and that's all superficial stuff. Like, say you want transition lenses and things like that. Mm-hmm. You can pay up to, you know, $800 for them if you want, but you can also pay as little as $300.
Yeah.
Mm. Are they subsidized, or is it just like...
You can get them off Amazon.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. No, Amazon, so I mean, like, is
no,
the...
No,
no. No.
Interesting.
The, no. Services for blind people are not subsidized. And that's a frustration that's and a thing that's constantly being debated in Congress. Like, things like a cane... We have to, you know, and canes can be expensive, right? They pays for our, we have to buy our own canes.
Yeah.
And same thing with the smart glasses, any kind of technology. Excuse me. We have to cover.
That's so bizarre. Like,
it is very.
How expensive are the canes?
Yeah.
On average, the range,
probably,
I suppose.
Probably $50.
Yeah. $50.
The good ones are probably $70.
Yeah.
Yeah. $70-$80 a piece.
That's not,
and then you have to buy like the cane, depending on what type. There's like graphite. There is like different like cane tips you can use that you can buy for them as well. But if you want like a specific type of cane tip for like specific type of wear in use, like if you want to go hiking or things like that, some of them are like $5 a piece, some are like $10 a piece for the different types, on top of like what you had to buy for the cane.
Yeah,
so it just adds up.
Yeah, it just definitely adds up. Yes.
How long do they last?
Yeah,
depends on the user, right, Patricia?
Yeah, well, it does. I actually, because I am primarily a dog user, I did have a cane that actually lasted me close to 20 years, but it I took it when my previous dog passed away in November. And I had to pull it out, and like this thing is disgusting.
When do you typically need to like exchange or like renew your cane, or not really?
Oh yeah. Yes, no, especially absolutely. The more you use it.
Yeah.
Like I said, I use mine in a new area, for example, so if I need to show something to my dog. So I do typically you know, use my cane from time to time, but not like Miguel uses his, you know, everywhere he's going. It's exposed to weather and bicyclists running it over.
Yep. I hope not. That's dangerous. Both for Miguel and for the cyclist.
Yeah.
Projectile.
Seems like it would just be a big pile of problem.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
No, I'm sorry. I've had a couple friends whose canes have been destroyed by a bicyclist that wasn't quite paying attention.
You heard it here, cyclists. Watch out. Please don't run over anyone's accessibility cane.
Please do not. No, please be aware of your surroundings whenever you're outside.
Please do. Yeah. Even if you're walking down the sidewalk and you don't see someone's cane, please don't jump over canes.
Please don't step on them.
Yeah.
Please don't try to grab them or move them.
Or hit them with a sword.
And I, you know, I think that was probably one of the biggest differences from, and I don't know, Miguel, how much you get this. When I was walking with a cane before I made the choice to transition to a dog, there would be people, you'd walk on the sidewalk and they'd see the cane and they would fly off the sidewalk into the street. Like,
yes, this happens. This actually happens.
I don't know why.
Wait, they would fly. Wait,
they're just like trying to
jump. Like they would jump,
just trying to get out of your way.
Yeah. You can like hear them leaping from one side of the sidewalk to the other. Just
the total panic.
It's like the total panic of like the fear, the fearness of, I don't know what it is.
They're not going to hit you. You're not going to hit them with the what?
Or like, I don't know if you had this too, Patricia. Like when you go to a restaurant and like like, you're outside and there's like people standing and then they stop talking. And I'm like, can you guys keep on talking so I can move out of your way?
Exactly.
So I will run into you.
No, I had this one. And again, it was during, while TriMet was remodeling one of the transit centers and they moved all the bus stops. And I went to where I thought my bus was going to be. And it was early in the morning. It was like 7 a.m. And there was a person nearby. They were smoking. So I could smell them. And I was like, hey, excuse me, can you tell me if this is where my bus is? And they wouldn't talk. They wouldn't say a word. And then and I found this, like, I know you're there. I can smell you. And then I hear them walk away. And then they turn. And because, you know, you can tell size type of shoes, right?
Yes.
And I hear them walk away, turn, and walk back, and then act like they just got there. It's like, excuse me, ma'am, can I help you?
Way to play it off, huh?
Maybe if I'm really still, they won't notice me.
They won't notice me here standing here. Okay.
Even though I'm blowing smoke in their face.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Because obviously, you know, if you're blind, you operate on T-Rex other rules.
Other senses, basically. We magically have new senses for us. And I've always asked, I don't know if you're asked, Patricia, but every time I go into an Uber car and they see me going to work, they're like, you work? I'm like, yeah. We have bills to pay. You know, life is not free. Mm-hmm.
You think I get my housing for free?
Yeah. Like everybody else.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. You are listening to Let's Talk, Portland Community College's broadcast about disability awareness on KBOO-FM Portland.
Yeah. This is not a part of the questions, but I also just wanted to ask, since it's the New Year's, I wanted to ask you guys if you made any New Year's resolutions, if any at all.
No. Like I said, in November, my dog was diagnosed with cancer and then died. And then I was surprised. I was expecting to not get another dog until next summer. And the school surprised me the Monday before Thanksgiving and said, can you come out on December 1st and get a new dog? And
that was fast. Sweet. Yeah.
That was super fast.
Wow. It was. It was amazingly fast. I'm not exactly sure how they pulled it, but they said they had a dog they thought was a good fit. And they wanted to place her with me. And they had room in the class. So that's been my world for the last month.
Training the new.
So I guess my New Year's resolution is to get, because she is young, she's 2. Like I said earlier, we only met on December 3rd, so not even a full month yet, right?
Yeah.
Tomorrow will be our 1 month anniversary of
Yay! Congratulations!
Are you guys gonna like get dinner and a movie, or?
So we're still working on building our relationship and getting her comfortable, because she started out life in New Jersey, now she's in Oregon.
Poor girl.
Big change.
Big change. New city, new job.
3,000 miles away.
Wow. Oh yeah, no, definitely, yeah.
Oh, she could tell that we were talking
about
her. She perked up a little bit.
Miguel, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
New Year's resolutions. No, continuing my goals from last year.
Which are
my fitness journey, continuing dragon boating. We start in February again, so I'm super excited about that. I got a message from a coworker of mine that she works for the Oregonian, that they want to know more experiences about screen reader users and if I could go demonstrate. So I'm super excited about that.
That's so cool. That is really cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
She was the first person, when I moved out here 8 years ago, she's one of the first people to believe in me and was like, okay, Miguel, I want you to apply to be the Spanish editor position. And I was like, what? That's crazy.
Spanish editor? Did you know? You know Spanish, though, right?
Yes, I do. Oh, okay, I'm fluent in Spanish. You know, I'm a fluent Spanish speaker.
Oh, okay.
But at the time, I was barely into college. And I'm like, you know what? I'll give it a try. If she believes in me, then why not? You know, but it was really cool to receive that message this morning and just kind of her reach out to me and was like, hey, Miguel, can you help us? You know, I want to do a training for screen reader users. Experiences with the Oregonian. I'm like, sure, of course, I will help. And then doing another triathlon this year. That's my goal. Yeah.
Hey. Yay. Nice. When are you guys starting back up again? I feel like it's a bit too
now.
Cold. Oh, wow.
Dragon boat practices are already started?
They started in February.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Oh, okay, I was like, Dragon now. February, I'm like, huh?
I was actually, the first blind team in Oregon was Blind Ambition, and that was my team.
Wow. Oh, nice. Oh, so you did Dragon Boat.
Oh, yeah, for 20 years.
That's so cool. Wow. Did not know that.
During the pandemic, all the teams had to stop because nobody could drag a boat during the pandemic. So that was when Blind Ambition came to an end. And there was a lot of loss. I had a couple teammates that passed away. So I don't know. It broke my heart. I haven't been able to bring myself to go back to it.
Yeah, not the same going back.
Not the same. Yeah.
Did you ever race against each other?
Miguel and Patricia?
No, he wasn't into it yet. This is only your second year, right, Miguel?
Oh, it's
my
your
third year.
Oh, it's your third.
Yeah. Hmm. Third season. Wow. Yeah. Maybe one day, Patricia, we'll race.
No, Blind Ambition was fun. We traveled all over the country. We raced in the Potomac. Went to Washington, D.C. We raced in Victoria, B.C. We went all over Colorado, Arizona.
That sounds like a blast.
That sounds
right. Yeah, right?
What about you, Mary?
I'm going to go to the gym once.
Yay! You start small. You always start small.
That's an infinite percent increase over last year. So,
zero.
Do you have a gym membership?
No, I'm just going to use the gym at work.
Oh, okay. Well, that works too. That works too.
Wait, the gym at work?
Yes. Yeah,
we can
right
use
across
a
from the.
You
the
can
oh,
use
wait,
the gym
we do
at
have a gym at PCC.
Yeah,
completely forgot about that.
You do have access to the gym at PCC.
Oh. Yeah. And I keep asking, like, I've gone into the gym before and been like, hey, how do I sign up for the gym? And they're like, you do that in the student service building. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I went over to the student service building and I was like, hey, can I sign up for the gym? And they're like, oh, yeah, you do that in the gym. And I'm like,
what's going on?
Is there some place like directly between these two that I'm supposed to find, you know, the magical gym gnome and do a quest to get to the gym membership?
Oh, goodness.
But no, I'm gonna go to the gym at least once because I actually really love working out. I just haven't had the opportunity to in the last, you know, couple of years. Ever since moving away from it. Because when I was in at school in Chicago, I had a habit of going to the gym, the 24-hour gym in my dorm, at about 11 p.m. Working out until about 1, and then just coming home, taking a shower, and going to sleep. And it was awesome. It was fantastic.
Fantastic.
I like working out late at night because it's a good way to wind down because I am nuts.
Do you just like go for a run, or do you go to the gym and like actually like work out?
Oh no, yeah, like a gym full on, like
full on like
pumping iron
and
stuff.
Yeah,
wow. they had this really cool. They had this bike, like a stationary bike that had videos of taking a bike tour through the Swiss Alps.
Oh, that's so cool!
So I would just be, you know, I would just like put on my headphones, turn on a podcast, and then just ride through the Swiss Alps for 45 minutes instead of, you know, just looking out the second floor window at a gray building in front of me. And it was super nice. So yeah, I want to go back to the gym at least once.
Nice. Definitely. I would actually, now that I know that there is a gym at PCC, I would probably go there too.
Good gym. They have basketball. They have a bunch of,
I know that they have a basketball court. I just didn't know that they had a gym. Where
but they
is
don't
it?
Have a pool anymore.
No, there's no more pool.
That's the bummer part.
I would love
so
to go to a pool.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing now for exercise. I joined a gym just so I could use their pool a couple times a week because I'm all about the water sports.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I would rather swim than run.
Yeah.
Swimming sounds so much fun right
swimming
now.
Because
so
you
fun.
Don't sweat when you swim. Or at least when you do, you don't notice it.
Have you tried water Pilates, Patricia?
Water what? Pilates?
Water Pilates.
I have not even heard of water Pilates.
Or like water exercises?
How do you do that? Stand on your head in the pool and stick your feet in the air? What?
I think it would be a lot easier, right?
How are you supposed to? What? How do you do that?
Sorry, water aerobics. I don't know.
Oh, water aerobics. I was like, water Pilates. I downward dog in the water. I'm like, okay.
I think that's called just floating there.
Hold your breath, like.
Or get a little snorkel too.
Oh, no. That is not. No,
I've tried water aerobics, but with the acoustics of an indoor pool, I cannot follow along well enough to know what they're saying. So I just swim. I just do laps.
Yeah, for sure.
I wonder if there's like an accessible one of those somewhere around.
Maybe. Around I mean, I don't know. As far as poles go, the only poles I know are like community center poles.
Yeah, and those are so big and huge.
Those are huge.
I go to a gym pool because the community center pools give you very restricted hours.
Very restricted.
And they're always full of screaming children.
Screaming.
Yes.
And screaming parents.
Locker rooms, and like figure out, okay, which direction do I go, and where's the pool at, and then where do I put my stuff down? And that's so much fun to do with, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then hoping to not slip and fall on any, you know, unmarked mud spots.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Those are terrible.
Well, I took my new dog to the gym this last weekend for the first time because I've been slowly exposing her to everything. And she was a master at navigating the locker room.
Good job.
Yeah. She's like, this is my territory. I know what I'm doing.
She got that dog in her.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the Jersey coming out.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Just native to a gym.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on top of getting in shape, I would say my New Year's resolution is definitely trying to put myself out there a little bit more. I've always been an introvert at heart. So I'm hoping to try to find a singles speed dating. I know this is like a very advanced start, but I really want to at least try to put myself out there for this new year. And yeah, we'll see if sparks fly or anything like that. Yeah.
One of the...
you know one? I was going to ask. Sorry. Sorry, what were you going
to
say?
No, one of the resolutions I made was to stop making a fool of myself on live radio, but that's already gone out the window.
Oh,
so,
well, I mean, you could start now.
No, it's too late. I know I'm going to do it again.
Oh, no. Please don't. So Patricia, sorry, going back, so this is the final question. So you've stated before that your favorite restaurant is a place called La Hacienda Real. Thank you. I see the pronunciation on the sheet, but I cannot do it. What's your go-to usual from that restaurant?
You know, it's funny. I didn't remember telling anybody that. But La Hacienda Real is a restaurant that I used to eat at quite often. And it was, again, one of those things that kind of disappeared after the pandemic.
But
they are still there. They are still there. I just haven't been there due to other things going on. But they have this enchilada dish, Enchiladas Vallarta, which it is amazing. It's got this orange tomatillo sauce on it. And so it's chicken and this orange sauce, and it is the most amazing dish. I love it.
Man, now I'm craving enchiladas.
I know, right? Enchiladas are very possibly my number one favorite food in the entire world.
Oh, yeah.
It's the only place I've ever seen one that did an orange tomatillo sauce. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Are they here in Portland?
There's one in Beaverton. There's a few locations. There's one in Salem and there's one in Beaverton.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, it looked like there were a few in Salem and then the other one. Like, I would totally go, but
there
it's
might
just,
be one in Portland. I'm not sure. But I.
Where is it? Or
Beaverton.
Beaverton. On Canyon.
Oh, yeah, that's very far.
For good Mexican food,
You will love it.
I will,
it is really good.
I know. I used to.
Growing up in Southern California, I have a different thought on Mexican food than a lot of people in the Northwest.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes. No, definitely. Mm.
Understandable. Yeah. I was just there in Southern California not too long ago, and I was like, oh, the food here is so good.
Nothing like a SoCal burrito.
The burrito, the tacos, I was just thinking
of having. Yes. It is very different.
Yes.
So, yes, Miguel, I highly recommend that. Them for you because they are. It was really good.
Ooh, burritos.
I know.
This weekend, there'll be a trek on my weekend.
Yeah, I know, right? Will you go all the way out there for? Oh,
yes.
How far? It's
not that far from the Beaverton Transit Center. Actually, you could walk from the Beaverton Transit Center to
it. Okay.
Maybe I'll make it work. Because there used to be this place right across from the PCC Cascade campus that I worked at, and they had just fantastic burritos, and then they just up and closed last year.
What was it called?
Los Gorditos, I think.
Los Gorditos. Oh,
it was the one.
I know the
one. It was
one.
Like a block down next to the game, next to the game store.
Yeah.
And it closed, and I was like, well, I don't want to go out for lunch anymore. Because like I can either go get a mediocre burger from a bar or the same pizza I've had every single day for the last four years.
That's pretty much, what
they have. Seems to be it. It's so sad.
Because the Thai restaurant's closed now.
Yeah.
No, there's a Vietnamese restaurant like right across from Cascade Campus.
Yeah, it reopened, but it's so expensive.
It is expensive.
Yeah. we've lost a lot of really good restaurants in the last few years.
Very sad.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us here today. It's been absolutely fantastic to
Patricia. This was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on the show.
Yeah, it's been fantastic to hear your story and hear all the work that you do with the community and learn all these things that I don't know about, even though I've been working in this field for over a year at this point, because a lot of these things just aren't talked about, like the ugly laws and all the relationships that people with disabilities have to the police and to transit and to education and all that stuff. So it's been super fascinating talking to you, and thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for listening to Let's Talk, Portland Community College's broadcast about disability culture. Find more information and resources concerning this episode and others at pcc.edu/DCA. You can also find linked resources on today's episode page, hosted on KBOO.fm. Search for Let's Talk. This episode was produced by the Let's Talk Podcast Collective as a collaborative effort between students, the Accessible Education and Disability Resources Department, the PCC Multimedia Department, and KBOO Portland Community Radio. We post newly recorded content biweekly on our home website. Again, that's pcc.edu/DCA. And we hope you always tune in to our shows here on KBOO every first and third Friday of the month at 11 a.m. And I want to take one last moment to remind you that KBOO is doing the end of year drive, and you can donate to help the station continue running at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. That's kboo.fm/give. Man, I have run out of words. or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you.
listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM and streaming on the web, kboo.fm. I'm Don Jacobson, and moving on, we'll be here in just a few minutes right after the news.